Welcome to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. This is episode 136. Today, as you can tell by the title, we're going to be talking all about the news that's just dropped, the big news story in the jiu-jitsu world at the moment. Hannah Gracie's testimony in a pretty, what's become a high profile case where unfortunately a white belt was rendered a paraplegic by a black belt instructor, which resulted in a $46 million payout. And Hannah Gracie had a lot to do with that as the expert witness for the prosecutor team. And we're going to delve into that, whether we think that Hannah Gracie's comments were justified, whether he's a money-hungry sellout, and basically, yeah, way into that. So, Adam, have you seen the video where...
First of all, Kieran, unacceptable. That intro was way too concise. It was straight to the point, straight into what we're going to talk about. That's not our shtick, bro. What happened to the 20 minutes of rambling before
waste,
we even...
We got
to
waste everyone's time for 20 minutes.
Before we even told... Yeah. I've seen the video. Yeah, so as Kieran said, the unfortunate accident that happened back in 2018, 2019, something like that. But I assume the settlement has just happened, which is why it's publicly come out.
Yep.
If people are listening to this episode on the day the episode comes out, it was probably like a week ago, give or take, when all this came out. And yeah, I have seen the video, and I don't know, like I think maybe before going into the video,
should describe
maybe it might be better... Yeah, to go about the look at the testimony from Hannah.
Okay, so let's, for those that are in the dark and have no idea, or maybe you've just seen it and are not really sure, here's a rundown of the case, what happened, the numbers, the figures, et cetera, et cetera. So basically this case was between, is in regards to a sparring session, a grappling session between a role, if you will, between a BJJ white belt, Jack Greener, and his BJJ black belt instructor, 2-degree black belt, 2nd-degree back black belt, Francisco, and I'm going to butcher the last name. I think it's I'm not even going to try. It starts with I. It's some weird name. Anyway,
Francisco Igloo.
Yeah, it's like no, it's literally like Iturralde. Iturralde. Let's go with that. Anyway, so it led the role as a result. Francisco tried to do a rolling back take, which we're going to talk about in more detail because obviously it's the movement that rendered Jack Greener paraplegic. It caused him this neck injury due to a rolling back take, caused this white belt, Jack Greener, to lose control of all four limbs, basically lose all feeling from his nipples down, had no control over his bowel movements, like absolutely fucked him, right? Thankfully, though, since then, his condition has improved, but he still remains a quadriplegic and he has severe and permanent injuries, including limited function of all four of his limbs. And as I mentioned, bowel and bladder incontinence and so much more. So even though he has made some recovery, he's completely fucked from it. Now that needs to be pretty clear. And I'm not pulling any punches there. The poor kid's fucked.
I think regardless of your opinion of the incident, whether the instructor didn't take appropriate duty of care, whether he did it with malicious intent, whatever it is, you know, obviously it's tragic no matter how it happens. It's very, very sad to see someone get so severely injured.
Yeah.
But from my understanding of the case, the instructor has been getting dragged through the dirt big time. And from seeing the video, I mean, I don't really think that's fair. The video is from a like security camera sort of thing, I guess, in the gym. It's a pretty shitty video, but it doesn't look like anything out of the ordinary of a typical, opponents in turtle. You have your seatbelt and you essentially force their their chin to their chest to force them to roll and take their back. I see the video as just a freak accident.
Right.
A really, really unfortunate freak accident. It doesn't appear... Yeah, again, I don't know either of these people. I'm just solely going off a really shitty footage video. But if I were the witness called in, I'm not saying... Don't get me wrong. Like, let me clarify again. I'm not saying that the victim doesn't deserve millions and millions of dollars as a payout. Like, that's why gyms have public liability insurance, right? Like, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve a huge amount of compensation for an injury that he sustained on the mats. But how that injury happened, to me, it just looks like a freak accident. You know, the roll just was a little bit awkward and didn't, you know, kind of go over the shoulder as it should have, was a little bit more over the neck and head and resulted in the injury.
You're bringing up a really good point here, dude. When you first look at the video, and this is my opinion on it, right? I want to delve straight in. We're going to jump around a little bit, but we're going to get to the bottom of it, right? So when I first saw this break and I saw like the facts, and we have to mention Hannah Gracie, the reason people are slamming him as well and saying that, you know, his comments in the case are bullshit and all this is a few reasons, out of fear and the fact that he was billed the prosecutor team $126,000 US for his expert witness, which, you know, is not out of the ordinary. And there was an expert witness, which was Hannah's second cousin on the defendants, and which got paid very similar. So Hannah's not the only one that charged money. But basically the reason I'm preambling with this, when I first saw it, I saw, you know, Hannah Gracie, $126,000, all this sort of shit. And I'm like, this is bullshit. You know, this sets a bad precedent. And then, you know, I actually had a look at Hannah Gracie's response video. And the video in Hannah Gracie's response video to this whole backlash that he's been getting specifically, he shows a version of the video that was shown in court and that they used in court, and it had been edited. The video that they used in court has been edited to highlight things more clearly, because you have, as you mentioned, Adam, two dudes, both in black, no gi attire, shitty security footage, you know, low frame rate. But what they did is they edited it, slowed it down. Now, this black belt instructor, when you first look at the video, it does look, as you're saying, Adam, like a freak accident. Like they've gone for a back take. He tried to force the neck or yada, yada. But when you actually look at it and slow it down, he didn't have any control over Jack, the white belt, Jack, his head at all. The black belt tried to execute this rolling back take, which arguably is a riskier back take than the standard back take that you teach, Adam, where you do roll, but it's to the side, not all the way over the top, right? So when you look at the edited version, the dude fucked this technique up royally. When you look at it, it's not actually, in my opinion, a freak accident in terms of he's gone for, you know, utilizing the correct technique, and Jack, the white belt in this case, like responded poorly or whatever. He went for something where he completely fucked the technique. And when you see how he fucked the technique and the result of that fuck up, you know, the Jack's neck was completely spiked, and it almost, the movement, the move turns into a spinal attack when you execute it this way. And I can go into exact details on how he fucked it up and how it resulted in that spinal attack, but that's one thing I wanted to mention in the beginning, because when I first saw it, I was like, okay, yeah, look, that's a bit of an explosive movement. If you haven't seen the video, it's a rolling back take. The black belt like jumps in the air like a crazy banana.
Where did you see the video that was posted in court?
On Hannah Gracie's YouTube video.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, and when Hannah actually shows the video, the way they've edited it is they've highlighted each of the limbs of the both the black belt and the white belt to differentiate where the arm position was. So I think maybe this is a good segue, because you can tell I've done some fucking homework on this. I was really interested. This is a good segue to talk about the move itself that was trying to be executed and then what was executed instead. If you want.
Right. Yeah.
The movement isn't the standard rolling back take that you all probably know. Attacking from turtle, right? So we're in turtle. The white belt's in turtle. The black belt was trying to take the back. Now, the standard, like, basic bitch, like, super simple back take from there.
Basic bitch.
Yeah, is when you have the seatbelt, you use your shoulder, you drive your shoulder into the back of your opponent's head, force their head down, kind of like, you know, you as you force their spine down, you force them to roll, right? And you sort of just roll to the side. This version of the rolling back take, though, that was trying to be executed was made famous by Leo Vieira, and it rolls all the way over the top. Instead of rolling to the side with your opponent, you roll all the way over the top. There's two ways you can execute this with two separate grip configurations. The first is from the seatbelt grip, where you drive your shoulder into the back of the head, similar to the standard variation that you all probably know, except you roll over the top with your opponent, right? So that's the first variation. The second variation is from a double underhook grip. So you have double unders on your opponent, very high double unders, and you still force your opponent's head to tuck and roll by using your shoulder in the back of your neck. But because you have high double unders, your head comes into the gap between your opponent's head and their shoulder. So your head comes right next to theirs and you roll all the way over the top. In both instances with that back take, both instances with those grips, not only does your opponent have the ability to base with their hands to support their weight if needed, but you're also utilizing your shoulder to force their head to tuck and roll. So you have complete control over your opponent's head. Now, there is also a very interesting instructional video. I believe it's on Bonanno's channel, or it could be on BJJ Fanatics, but it's regardless, it's with Bonanno and Leo Vieira. When he teaches this on BJJ Fanatics with Bonanno, he mentions explicitly, this is actually quite foreboding, that this move is only safe because you have control over your opponent's head. So though that's the prerequisite in order to complete this move, is you must have control over your partner or your opponent, their head at all times with your shoulder. It's your shoulder driving into the back of their neck that forces the head to tuck and roll. And that is why this move is safe. Now, that brings me to what was
what this dude do.
Exactly. Yeah. What did this guy do? He did not have a seatbelt grip. It looks like he does, but he actually doesn't. He does not have a seatbelt grip and he doesn't have double under grip. The grip he actually has is his left arm is trapping his the white belt, Jack. I'll just call him Jack. The black belt's left arm is trapping Jack's left arm to the side of his body. So his grip is low and it actually keeps shifting down before he executes the technique. It starts up, his grip starts up around the bicep and actually ends up shifting down to his elbow, bicep, tricep region on Jack. So Jack's left arm is completely pinned to his side. And you need to imagine that you're in turtle now. Imagine you're in turtle and you have your grip underhook on your right side and your left side is trapping your opponent's left arm to their body. Where is your shoulder in this case? It is nowhere near your opponent's neck.
No, it'd be nowhere near. It'd be all nowhere the way near. Down near the lat.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Potentially even in the middle of their back on their spine or something.
100%. That's where your shoulder position is.
The mid-back or... best case scenario, the middle of the upper back, but nowhere near the back of the head.
Nowhere near the back of the head. You are so far low. Couple this incorrect shoulder position with the fact that the black belt, Francisco, explodes into this roll, tries to launch his entire body weight over the top. And you got to remember that Jack's arm is trapped to his side, right? So he can't post. He can't base out. He's got nothing on his left arm. It's completely trapped to his side. Then what happens? The black belt launches himself over the top to try and do this modified version of the rolling back take. And because of the arm being trapped, there's no post, the explosive movement, Jack's head is literally spiked on the mat. And his head goes one way, his body goes the other way. Like, even if he tucked his head, at the right time, the risk of injury would still be high. Could Jack have prevented this by tucking? Maybe, and I'd say probably, but the risk of neck injury would still be there because of the explosive nature of it. It came out of nowhere, basically, from Jack's perspective. And the shoulder, the black belt shoulder was nowhere in the right position. His head wasn't forced to roll. So, I mean, people are slamming the white belt saying he did the incorrect thing, which, I mean, in hindsight, yeah, he did. But, I mean, I can't really blame him at all.
Well, I mean, like, hearing all that more detailed information still doesn't leave me thinking that the instructor necessarily did it with, you know, malicious intent.
No, absolutely not.
You know, you don't know. Maybe he's a super nice dude. Maybe he's a prick and he did do it intentionally to hurt someone. I don't know. But it's not fair to say anything about the white belt saying he did the wrong thing.
Yeah, I agree.
He's a white belt. Yeah. I'm black belts make mistakes, you know? Like, yeah. I mean, so to crucify a white belt saying he did the wrong thing, he should have done this, probably, but he's also a white belt, right?
Yeah.
But then I guess, you know, more experience, more responsibility goes to the black belt, you know? If you're doing techniques that kind of require a specific reaction and you're dependent on getting that specific reaction due to your opponent having a certain level, a skill level or knowledge level, right? If they don't have that, you can't execute that move, right?
Exactly.
So I always give the example to beginners, if you're trying to play reverse De La Riva and the person on top doesn't know how to engage in reverse De La Riva and sit down into essentially like a Cossack squat sort of position, you can't really play reverse De La Riva. You're not getting the appropriate feedback from your opponent to allow that. The same way that, you know, a grandmaster chess player can't do some crazy complicated set of moves against a scrub because the scrub's not going to move the correct pieces, you know?
Yeah.
So some more responsibility definitely goes to the instructor for that. It's like if I'm any student who's I have that are on their early days of learning leg entanglements and heel hooks and that, the amount of times that I have to let go of control positions, even not even necessarily having a bite on the heel, just control positions, the amount of times I have to completely let go of it because that new student rolls the wrong way, spins the wrong way, and then if I held on, they would have torn their own knee apart, right? And I put that responsibility on myself, like, to look after them. If I had, regardless of the belt, someone who's new to heel hooks, they could already be a black belt, right? But maybe they're like, man, I've never done no gi, I don't know anything about them, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, and we're having a roll. And I just go for some heel hook and bite down and they spaz the wrong way, rip their own knee apart. Like, I don't think that's me being a very good instructor.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's quite an overarching comment because, you know, obviously it's a one-way discussion. I don't know if the black belt would counter this by saying, you know, man, but like I've been training with Jack for 2 years and, you know, he knows this back take and I've done it to him a million times.
Good
Everyone
point.
Does it or
but
whatever.
Here's the thing. They actually proved in this case that not only was this black belt obviously not super familiar with this back take, he had never taught it. And that was proven by multiple students. And in the case they used, a black belt student of this guy who's been training with him since purple belt, I believe. So he got his purple belt, his brown belt, and his black belt from this student. And he said in court that he had not once seen this back take taught. Not fucking once.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, like, but it also, it's hard, right? Yeah, without having all the information and having the counter arguments and stuff, because you can paint the picture to show whatever you want it to show.
Oh, exactly, right? Yeah.
So I'm just trying to sort of make points, but also be the devil's advocate for everyone in the case, right? Mm. So there's also, I mean, where do you draw the line, right? So if if you and I are rolling,
yep,
and I have you in a submission and you refuse to tap and that results in a severe injury,
whose fault
can
is
you
it?
Then come can yeah. you then come and sue me or whatever? That's, I mean, a little bit different because it's a submission hold in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. Both parties are responsible for their safety. But a move like this that is not a submission move, it is just a move that was executed incorrectly. Like, let's give another example, right? Like, let's say one of... I actually don't find this movement that cringe because I was taught it correctly and I teach it correctly, but jumping close guard, right? I know a lot of gyms don't allow it, and I don't necessarily allow it just all the time in classes, but we definitely teach it and practice it because I say to my students, right, for those who don't know, jumping close guard, you're not allowed to do it, white belt. You used to be able to, but you're not anymore.
Thank God.
But the higher belts you can. So whether you allow it in the gym or not, I say to my students, you have to learn how to jump guard and how to catch someone jumping guard, jumping close guard, because we may not do it in the gym. You may think you're never going to jump close guard, but what if you go compete and someone jumps close guard on you, right? The technique is within the rules. So like you have to be at least some level prepared. Mm. So let's imagine that it was a similar thing. Like what if instead of the back take, it was jumping close guard, ignoring that, okay, but white belts aren't allowed to do it. Let's imagine for the argument of this example that Jack is a blue belt, right? And then Italo goes to jump close guard but fucks it up, lands, completely blows out Jack's legs and it requires something severe, right? Like an amputation of one of his legs or something, you know? Like at what point is it just a, man, like just a mistake was made and like accidents happen. And man, like the same way that a bloody Formula One driver makes a mistake, which results in the other dude going head on into the wall, like like mistakes happen when you're executing anything. You know, I made this morning and I fucked it up a little bit, you know, like, and I've,
you fucking up the coffee didn't result in, you know, you being fucking quadriplegic, right?
No, but I've shat my pants already. So, I mean, you know, well, like,
I think you're touching on a really good point though, because you're mentioning the fear response. And this is why I jumped on the bandwagon, right? Against Hannah Gracie and all this stuff. And I want to go into at some point some of Hannah Gracie's statements during the case that I just don't agree with, which aided to everyone piling onto Hannah Gracie hate. But I think you're touching on a really good point precedent.
To be clear, you already hate him because he has Gracie University.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's cringe as fuck. He's cringe as fuck already. So,
have you seen him on Shark Tank, bro? Yeah,
dude, that was pretty good. His Shark Tank appearance was pretty fucking good. The man's a salesman, okay? I can't figure out if I hate Hannah Gracie, if I fucking love him. It's a bit of both at this point. But I like that. He's fucking hoodie flip. It's pretty cool. Anyway, let's get back to precedent, okay? And this is the big fear, particularly for someone like yourself or other instructors that or gym owners, more in the States, but still. This case, because this Jack was awarded $46 million and he won the case outright, does this set a precedent that anytime someone gets hurt in jiu-jitsu, they're going to immediately sue their school and all these schools are going to be getting screwed over? I've hurt someone in jiu-jitsu that required surgery. And like, you know, that person could have turned around and sued you, Adam, for, you know, having an environment that's not safe. But I don't think they would have won. But still, like, the point is, does this has put a lot of fear in a lot of people where they feel now vulnerable because, you know, Jack won the case and was it a freak accident? Was it, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll draw another sort of parallel for you, which is really interesting on this sort of topic. Because if in Formula One, when penalties are awarded for a driver making a mistake, let's say a driver causing a collision, in the rules, it's actually stated that the, unless they've changed, the rules change all the time, right? But last time I was, you know, educated about it, in the rules that actually states that the severity of the penalty to the driver who made a mistake is like irrelevant to the consequences of the collision, right? So if they cause a collision that just results in the driver getting out of the car, but his car's fucked and being like, oh, God damn it, right? Or that driver then being paralyzed, it doesn't, like the result of the collision, the consequences of the collision have nothing to do that with the penalty that's awarded.
Okay.
You know, so if we take this same rolling back take, like, where is the line? What if it just jacked his neck and he needed like 6 weeks rehab? Mm. You know, like, can you then sue for 46? Obviously not, because
the damages,
right, is what why the number's so high, right?
Yeah.
The loss of income, loss of, you know, ability
loss of
to work
life,
and all,
really, like,
yeah,
fuck.
And all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So that's why the number's so high.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, where is the line that then you're like, you know, I can now sue you? Know
exactly,
or like, where is the line? Is it like, oh, I got injured in a way that I shouldn't have been injured?
Yeah,
sue you. Or I got injured in a position that is designed to create, like, doing a twister. What if I did a twister to you and you didn't want to tap and I didn't crank it and I slowly put it on, but all of a sudden, like, you slip a disc or you lose feeling in your legs or whatever?
Yep,
like, I mean, where's the line? And I guess that's why a lot of, as you mentioned, probably more in the US, because this took place in the US. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not 100% versed in our public liability laws in Australia and whatever and how it works. I assume every country will be slightly different. But
it's,
you can see how gyms,
you
can see how gyms in the US could be worried. I mean,
this is set a precedent. I want to read Hannah's statement on precedent, but I don't agree. I agree with it and I don't agree with it. I think that this case, particularly the way the state's court system works, this has fucking set a precedent, right? To say it hasn't is illogical. It's a high profile case with a huge payout where, you know, the gym, despite the fact that they have these things in place, has found liable.
I don't know if, before you read that, like, in terms of your ability to sue, for any American listeners, I don't know if this is common knowledge, but like, and I don't know if this is factual either, but it's kind of, people outside of America, we're told, or we know, that you can pretty much sue someone for anything in the States. Like, you know, some of the old stories I've heard is, if you're a burglar, a thief, and you're breaking into someone's house and you fuck yourself up on the glass of the window that you smashed climbing through the window, you can sue the homeowner. I don't know if that's true or just like a myth that people talk about, but I also heard one that my dad told me probably like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, where a lady tripped over a toddler in a convenience store and got hurt and sued the convenience store. But the toddler she tripped over was her own fucking toddler. Tripped over her own kid in a store and sued the store owner and won.
You know, like, what?
Yeah. So,
fucking what? Mean, oh man, that's crazy.
I don't have factual evidence to back this up. This is all just, so
that's hilarious.
Yeah, again, this
I
might
be surprised if shit
there
like
might
that
be
happens.
Americans listening, being like, bro, no, it's all blunt. It's kind of like how when people think they come to Australia and just see kangaroos and snakes and spiders everywhere. It's like, that's not what it's actually like here. So I'm more than aware that I may be very, very wrong. But anyway, go on. Let's hear.
Okay, this is from Hannah Gracie. I got this from the YouTube description of the video that he released. It's like a 20-minute video if you want to check it out. Anyway, so precedent. There appears to be some fear this case may set a precedent that if anyone gets hurt doing jiu-jitsu, that the school and or instructor will automatically get sued and be held liable. I'm not qualified to give legal advice, but my opinion is that this will not be the case. This has a very unique and preventable situation involving a black belt instructor sparring with a white belt who performed a technique he was never taught, performing a technique he never taught to the student, and did the technique in a manner that is inconsistent with how it's conventionally taught, rather than opting for the safer technique, of which there are many. for a safer technique, of which there are many, which we've already discussed. In the convergence of these very unique and extenuating circumstances that led to the jury to reach the verdict it did. Okay, so I agree with that, that yes, there was extenuating circumstances in this case, yada, yada, yada. However, because this is precedent, there's going to be very, animated prosecuting attorneys that are going to utilize this case as precedent, and it's going to have some substantial weight in their case that they previously wouldn't have had. Now, does that mean that I think that Jack in this case shouldn't have been awarded $46 million? No, but I just wanted to read that and piggyback off another point that misconception. And it's to do with waivers. Now, Hannah did also talk about waivers, and unbeknownst to me, but now that I've, you know, looked into the case a bit further, the waiver that Jack signed when he joined the gym was actually not admissible in court because there was a technical error with the waiver. So despite the fact that there were waivers in place, they didn't get held up because obviously the instructor in this case, like maybe he got it off Google or like a template, or maybe he wrote it himself, who knows, but it wasn't written by a lawyer. Therefore it was easily dismantled by lawyers. So I think that that is a very, very good lesson to be held by all gym owners in this case, to have your waivers scrutinized by a legitimate lawyer. So that if, you know, because the thing is with waivers is, you know, they're only important when you need them, right? And when you need them is when they're going to be picked apart by lawyers. So there is zero point having a shit templated waiver because you're going to get fucked on. So have a good waiver, because in this case, it wasn't even used.
It's like when I got my more recent motorbike, I was explaining to my wife that like the absolute minimum sort of quality of helmet that I'll wear and how much that costs.
Yep.
She's like, you can get a helmet for way cheaper, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, you can. But like, not only are they uncomfortable and whatever, they're not as safe and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, but you don't plan on crashing. And you're like, no, I sure don't plan on crashing. But if I do, I want a goddamn helmet. Good helmet. Yeah. You know, like, yeah,
things
you only
not to
need
cheap out on
you,
helmet.
You only, yeah, you only need it when, you know,
when you need
your
it.
Your ass over tits, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that was, you know, really interesting, and I wanted to bring that up because a lot of people have been saying, you know, like he shouldn't have got anything, did he not sign a waiver and all this stuff. Yeah, he did sign a waiver, but the waiver wasn't held up. And, you know, if you're a gym owner listening to this, or you're in, you know, thinking about opening a gym, you might be scoffing at that and you're thinking, oh, well, my waiver wouldn't have been shit. You'd be surprised. Like, it's quite difficult for a layperson, as in someone that's not, you know, doesn't have legal training to review a robust waiver and have all the appropriate language in there that's going to hold up when $46 million online.
Legal language is so like difficult to understand if
100%.
You're not a lawyer.
Yeah.
Which neither of us are.
I barely understand normal language, bro.
Yeah. Like a word that you think means one thing in a particular sentence structure because it's talking about whatever.
Yeah.
But that word doesn't mean apple anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it means
banana.
Yeah, right? Because of the context that it's being used. It's crazy, man. Legal language is a whole nother thing.
Yeah. I do want to talk about as well some statements Hannah made that have specifically that the jiu-jitsu community has pulled from the transcripts or whatever that have, you know, pissed people off. So
what did he say?
The first one, and this kind of ticks me the wrong way as well, and we've spoken about this before, but Hannah said during the trial that, I quote, BJJ is considered the gentle art and is relatively safe.
Yeah, like I agree with half of that. I think, you know, so first of all, the whole BJJ being called the gentle art is blown wildly out of proportion, right?
Do you know why it's called the gentle art?
Well, have you heard people refer to jiu-jitsu as archi suave?
Archi suave.
Yeah. So it means gentle art, right? But did I ever in, okay, and in the grand scheme of things, I was just a foreigner who lived in Brazil for 5 years. I'm not a Brazilian who grew up in Brazil and has trained jiu-jitsu since I was 5 years old. But in my entire career, I've never heard anyone like refer to jiu-jitsu as archi suave. Like I've never heard a Brazilian person be like, you know, yeah, jiu-jitsu like archi suave, or like, yeah, I'm going to go train archi suave or whatever. Like, you know, I think the fact, you know, saying that people call it the gentle art is blown wildly out of proportion, but I think.
Right? I don't know if I've mentioned this. Obviously, I haven't mentioned this. The reason it's called the gentle art is because if you translate the Japanese word jiu-jitsu to English, it translates as the gentle art.
Oh, okay. So I've missed a translation there, right?
Yeah. So it's archi suave Brazilians from Japanese. Yeah. It's from Japanese.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. But, you know, even then, have you ever seen Japanese jiu-jitsu? Like pull up some, go watch some YouTube videos of Japanese jiu-jitsu.
Yep.
And tell me that it is more gentle than Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's not, bro. Japanese jiu-jitsu is almost like those horrific judo videos you see of instructors slamming kids into the mat. Like, it's super aggressive and hard.
Oh, yeah. It's basically like it's modified judo, right?
Yeah.
Very similar, yeah. Anyway.
I don't think it's gentle at all. So I think that statement is wildly blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I do agree with the latter half of saying it's relatively safe. And I say this to a lot of new students. I say, man, considering it is a full contact combat sport, your risk of injury and your ability to train at near 100% and come back the next day uninjured compared to, you know, like, okay, do you maybe get more injured in jiu-jitsu than if you were someone who just casually took boxing classes?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, definitely.
But if you were a boxer who sparred all the time and competed in boxing competitions, 100%,
yeah.
Maybe you don't think you're going to get injured, but when you turn 40, you've got, what's that, CTE or whatever, yep. You know, the thing that NFL plays, the brain injury stuff that people get, right? Like, I have a lot of students who come from other full contact sports, but not combat, that come from rugby, right, and have destroyed shoulders and backs from rugby, right? Yeah. Or even I have one guy who came from what's supposed to be a completely non-contact sport in basketball, man, and his shoulder destroyed, right? You can pretty much like sneeze at it and it dislocates, right? Like, I mean, I think, is the risk of injury higher than playing tennis or golf? Yes, of course, right? But I mean, I think it's relatively safe considering what we're doing.
Relative. I think the important word in there is relatively. Is jiu-jitsu safe compared to walking down, you know, your sport is walking? No. Is it relatively safe compared to another full contact, 100% effort sport? Yes. So relative is the key term there.
Yeah. Relative, and I mean, obviously, accidents and things happen all the time. Like, you know, not wildly popular internationally, but in Australia and New Zealand, netball is quite a popular sport. Netball players frequently lose ACLs and tear tendons in their ankles and everything, like on the regular, bro, like all the time. And it is a complete no contact sport. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be playing tennis and throw out your shoulder or your elbow. But yeah, I have a black belt who is, 65, you know, maybe 2-3 years ago, managed to beat prostate cancer, like had surgery and everything for it. Bro, like he hasn't been injured short of like maybe a little, you know, bump and black eye or something in probably 5 years, man, you know, like it can be trained safe and can be really low risk of injury. Obviously, the more of any sport, the more you increase the intensity, the risk of injury goes up.
Yeah.
Okay. Like even a rock climber, again, a non-contact sport, have no other people involved. As you start trying harder and harder things, I'm not even talking about removing the ropes and free soloing, but as you start climbing harder walls, the risk of slipping and slamming against the wall, or the risk of ripping your finger open on some super sharp rock, like all that increases. So, you know, could you rock climb with never sustaining an injury? Probably. But I guarantee you there are a lot of professional rock climbers that are thwart with injuries.
Yeah. No, I think we're on the same page there. And now another set of statements that Hannah made, I'm not going to read quotes, but basically give you the general gist of it, is Hannah throughout his testimony stated that the gym in question here with where the incident occurred deviated from industry standards. These industry standards were like basically said that at a majority of gyms, novices are separated from advanced practitioners for a long period of time, i.e. that white belts roll with white belts, colored belts roll with colored belts. That is not
that
a
is
majority
the dumbest
of fucking
thing
gyms.
It's not even about that. It's just the dumbest statement ever.
Yeah,
like,
I agree. I 100% agree.
I mean, if you're a brand new white belt, whether it's day one or you've been training for 1, 2, 3 months or something, the absolute safest person you can roll with is like a black belt or a higher belt.
100%.
Higher belt in air quotes, you know. Maybe not that blue belt who likes to boot the shit out of white belts, but you know what I mean. Yep. Like, it's the higher belt, the person who's going to make sure you stay in safe positions. They're going to make sure they... I'll give you an example. I did a private yesterday, right? Mm. You were there, actually. You caught the end of it.
Yep.
I did a private with this guy, his first ever class, right, of jiu-jitsu. And right at the end, like, we had no intention to roll, but he was like, oh, I'd just like to see what it's like a little bit. And I was like, okay, we'll just move around a bit, right?
And Adam fucking pumped him, bro. The kid was crying. He's bleeding.
Yeah. And, we very quickly ended up in that position that probably every single person who's trained enough or is trained with a day one white belt has felt, where I'm side control on top, but he's still trying to attack a guillotine.
Yeah.
And I ended up just like, well, not tapping, but just like stopping him and saying like, oh, bro, like I did explaining that the way that you get out of this position because you can't finish it from side control bottom is actually starting to do really nasty things like digging knuckles into your throat and forearm into your throat, trying to give you a reason to let go of my head because you can't finish me. But I didn't want to do that to you that's not appropriate for someone who's just coming to jiu-jitsu. It's like, it's really aggressive. And so I wasn't going to do that to you. I don't want you to experience that yet. All right. So whereas if he was rolling with another white belt who maybe had 1 stripe, 2 stripe or something, like chances are that white belt would have just gone super nasty forearm to the throat. The correct thing to do to get out of that position and force them to let go of your head or Von Flute choke them or whatever. Mm. But for that brand new white belt, it's going to be too much. You know,
differential isn't great enough for them to be able to control every element of the role. Like a white belt that has 2 stripes, right? That's been training for 3, 4 months, whatever, versus a day one or week one white belt with no stripes, that the more senior white belt does not have enough skills in their arsenal and enough control in their arsenal to be able to control the movement of this day one guy completely and just nullify everything without having to put effort in, right? So whereas a black belt can, with zero effort, with zero force, without forcing anything, can use pure technique and nothing else and dominate the day one white belt by putting zero risk of injury on themselves or the opponent.
And then if the white belt does something silly or spazzy, black belt should let go and then stop them. And it's similar to what I was talking about before with leg entanglements, or obviously that's not going to happen with a day one white belt. But yeah, like you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't create an environment where, you know, you're all like, you know, the classic like, oh, white belts teaching white belts, right? But then also be like, white belts are only allowed to roll with white belts.
Yeah, what do you expect?
Well, fucking which is it, bro?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, which is it? Exactly. So,
I could not more strongly disagree with that, statement.
I completely agree with your
disagreement. You could also paint that picture how you want, like, you know, maybe depending on the individual, you may not pair a blue belt with a black belt who's preparing for worlds and he's just going
to... There's a different reason behind that, right? It's got nothing really to do with, you know, the risk of someone getting fucking spiked on the head or whatever. But from a safety concern,
the absolute safest person to have with you should be like would be a black belt.
In most cases, right? I completely agree. I disagree with Hannah here. Now there is another thing that Hannah said, which he's getting flack for, and that's he argued that there are a set of air quote elite moves that should only be used in competition and should not be practiced or done to lower belts. Now,
because if you do it in competition, it's the event organizer's problem for the payout.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's silly as well. Yeah, like, I mean, agree. You at least have to practice stuff, man. Like, yeah. You can't, like, okay, you know, you can't train in a way where you fully rip heel hooks the way you see guys do it in competition. But like to then just say like, oh, well, we don't do them at all because they're an elite set of moves reserved for competition. Well, how do I get good at like, exactly. What, I just, do I only get to practice them and get good at them when I compete and then get my knee ripped apart?
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it's,
yeah.
I get it with some techniques, like, you know, jumping close guard, very common that, like I said, I'll teach it because I want people to be able to do it and catch people because I've injured someone competing because I jumped close guard more than correctly.
And they didn't catch you.
Yeah, like, well, not as in like I landed flat on my back, but I, man, my guard closed in between his nipples and his hips, like so high.
Yep.
For those who don't know, the typical incorrect way of jumping guard is beginners jump really low and land on their opponent's knees and break their leg in half. My hips were way above his hips, but instead of him like bending his knees and catching me like you would catch something if someone threw, you know, a 20-kilo medicine ball at you and you'd bend your knees and catch it, he just like essentially like flamingo legged, pushed his hip back and locked his knees out.
Oh.
So then when my hips just went like whack into him and he's like, you know, nothing broke or anything, but he just screamed out in pain because his knee got super hyperextended.
Yeah, he fucking knee-barred himself.
Yeah, right. And so you need to be, and this was at black belt, right?
Oh, Jesus.
And so it's like you need to be able to catch people as well.
Oh,
but
man.
That's also a technique that in, you know, if we're painting the picture to make Hannah look better, I could go like, yeah, that's a technique that's very common that gyms will teach and whatever, but they'll say, don't do it in training.
I don't think that this really applies. I've never seen a technique apart from, you know, the standard ones like jumping, close guard. There's a specific takedown that you don't like us doing because it...
The Tanya Tosh one. People tend to blow out knees with that too.
Also like heel hooks for blue belt and up. Apart from that, I mean, I wouldn't really consider this an elite move reserved only for black belts or whatever, and that shouldn't be practiced on lower belts. But that brings us to a segue, right? The guy that we're talking about here, and I mean, I don't know how relevant this is, but Jack Rena, he's a white belt, but apparently he has several years of wrestling, and he'd been a white belt for multiple years. So he'd been about a two-year white belt, a senior white belt, we'll say, on the cusp of blue. And he has a wrestling background and he has a lot of competition experience. So we're not, do you, and here's the point I wanted to bring up. Actually, I wanted to bring this up earlier, but fuck it. Would you consider that individual, if we assume that all my information is correct, he's got at least 2 years of wrestling and he has at least 2 years at white belt and he has competition, like lots of competition under his belt. Would you consider that individual a beginner?
No. Let's look at Paul, for example. We got a white belt at the gym who trains so sporadically. Would you consider Paul a beginner?
No. He's been training for like three plus years. He's been training longer than me.
Yeah, he does. The dude will go a month without training and then you'll rock up to a competition and he's there registered competing.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
And then he smokes half the field.
maybe beginner to intermediate or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, well, I don't see the argument changing if Jack were a blue belt when all this happened.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
In my opinion, of course, the defense would have used that.
Yeah, 100%. The defense, it would have been easier for the defense, for sure.
I think, but potentially more details will come out, or maybe there won't. Maybe this will be it.
I think, you know,
I hope it's not a precedent for multiple gyms getting sued. But obviously, you know, the gym does have an overarching duty of care and responsibility to look after their students. But I don't know, like the kind of angle that I've been taking the whole episode, without being in on the court case, you know, any of these tidbits, you can paint it in any particular way.
Yeah.
And even if it's painted in a way where the black belt is the most genuine, nice dude, not malicious, he's friendlier than Bernardo Faria and Marcelo Garcia combined and whatever, and yada, 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 Jack still deserves a payout. Like, the dude has been severely injured, and that's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, really, really sad. I agree to that. And one thing about being a, you know, an advisor or an expert witness in this case, I can't remember what book I was reading, but I was reading a book a little while ago written by a medical professional that top of their field and started doing these sorts of things, started giving, you know, expert witness for, obviously, for hire in court cases. And what they eventually, they stopped doing it because despite the fact that you're meant to be an expert witness, you're meant to be neutral and yada, yada, because you're being paid $126,000 in this case by the, you know, by the prosecutor, you are not only, you're not directly told you have to say this or you have to say that, but it's implied, yeah, right? Yeah. It's implied. Well, they're paying your bills. It's implied.
Yeah, I find that weird that you can pay someone money to.
Yeah, and a lot of testify. Fucking money, right? A lot of money. Yeah. And I mean,
like, if anything, it should kind of just be that expert witness kind of just gets paid the flat rate the same way the jury just gets paid a particular rate to take time off work, you know?
Yeah, but then there'd be no incentive to do it because it is a lot of work, right? Like, yeah, to be particularly in medical, maybe not in this case, I don't know. But
yeah,
in,
I guess. In medical, it's a lot of work. You can imagine the amount of hours of research and whatever that they would have to do.
The reason in this book that I was reading, the reason this doctor stopped doing it is because they couldn't live with themselves, as in morally, because they were being biased. They realized that because they're working so closely with these lawyers and with the victims or whomever, they wanted so much so for them to win because they're friends with them after a while. You know, they've spent all these hours working with them, going back and forward, that all their testimony is completely fucking biased, even if it's, you know, even if their side shouldn't win, and they just found themselves in a really difficult spot. So I just wanted to point that out, that yes, Hannah got paid $126,000. If you think that's excessive, it's irrelevant. But the point is that he got paid a lot of fucking money to give his opinion. Of course, his opinion is going to be painted in one direction. And he's, yeah, I already mentioned the outset, his second cousin was the expert witness on the other side. So I'm assuming it was another Gracie on the other side. But yeah. I think maybe... I mean,
overall, a very sad, you know, sad story that... Mm. You wouldn't want to see happen, and yeah, you could debate it forever and ever and ever. Mm. You know, anything that goes to court is essentially two people debating it, but then eventually a decision needs to be made, and you know, and that's that. You know, hopefully it doesn't result in any negative, overwhelmingly negative publicity for jiu-jitsu. We've got enough problems going on in jiu-jitsu, you know. So
yeah,
but But man, so obviously we needed to talk about this episode because it was a bit more current. Mm. However, next episode I would like to go over two things: your return from Canada, because people who 2 weeks ago we recorded an episode while Kieran was still in Canada, and then we missed an episode last week because of the transit coming back, and we just couldn't make it happen. This today is our second last domestic recording that we're doing. So when we record next week, it'll be our last recording domestically prior to you going. So
to Sweden this time.
To Sweden, yeah. So yeah, I'd like to talk about your return from Canada and your future trip to Sweden.
Yeah.
Right. And then after, so from 1:38 onwards, we'll be recording Australia to Sweden.
Yeah. Boom. Done. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean that's a wrap for us. Yeah, I agree. Case very sad. There's two sides to the story. And I think that despite all the memes and everything like that, I think Henna wasn't being, you know, he obviously is a little bit biased, but he made some fucking good points. I disagree with some of the things he's saying, but I also really agree with other things he's saying. So if you're in the camp of, you know, just hating on Henna like I was, go listen to Henna's like take on it. And I think that, you know,
and so now you just, now you're back to just hating him for Gracie University online.
Yeah, 100%. I'll never not hate him for that. Yeah. Despite the fact he's fucking Shark Tank hoodie flip is funny. He's got a new one now. He's got a new product. It's called the Sleeper Hold. His sales pitch is brilliant on that as well.
I don't even want
to. He's such a fucking salesman. It's so good. I have to say what the sleeper hold is. The sleeper hold is a, so on planes, when you go to sleep, right, your head drops forward. So he's got this stupid thing. It's literally just a buckle that goes around your forehead and buckles your head into the seat and then has.
They're not new.
Yeah, like, he's just marketing it. It's all it is. Like the hoodie thing is also not new. Yeah. Like, yeah, he's got his specific pattern design, but people have been making those flip hoodies for fucking forever, man. He's just marketed
Go YouTube it if you guys want some cringe in your life. guys, thanks so much for listening. Yeah, a bit of a sadder episode, but onto brighter and better things next week. As always, you know, you can catch us on Instagram, send us through any messages or whatever. I don't know if you saw, Kieran, we had a message from someone being like, hey, I just listened to your like healthy treats episode. Send me the recipe for the overnight oats. So you guys always reach out if you ever want to have a chat or whatnot.
Or get recipes.
Yeah, otherwise, we'll get recipes. Thanks for listening and we will catch you next time.